Thank you for joining us on this episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett, where we examine current and emerging technologies through the lens of diversity and equality. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett. Just to warn everybody, this is a topic that I came up with, so it's going to be a bit different from our normal discussions. But today, we're going to be talking about killer robots in film. I know everybody's out there thinking, like, great, this is just an excuse for Drew to talk about horror movies, which is not entirely wrong, but I also think that it reaches back into technology in a lot of ways that we will get into for this conversation, Rochelle.
So I would like first to introduce our audience to this new segment of our podcast, and this is called Drew at the Movies. So Drew at the Movies, Drew is going to tell us the latest movie or movies he's watched, give us a sort of review without revealing the end, you know, for those of you who hadn't gone to see it. So each time we hear Drew at the Movies, we'll be talking about a movie, whether it's a new or an old movie we'll talk about. So welcome to Drew at the Movies. So let's have at it, Drew.
Yes. Yeah. Why? So
robots in movies.
So robots in movies, one of my favorite subgenres of horror of all time. I think one reason it's nice to have robots in movies is that they can be destroyed with no guilt. So I think that's one positive thing. The most recent movie that comes to mind when I think about robots in movies was Megan, which just came out this year. You could probably call it a Child's Play ripoff because it is about an animatronic human doll that has this sort of advanced AI that lets her bond with an orphan that has come into contact with her. And then, of course, everything goes wrong because technology is bad and the robot goes on a killing spree, which is very fun.
So going to see Wakanda, and they were showing these massive previews. And when they showed the previews for Megan, I must say, part of me wanted to run right at that very moment, because when she started crawling on her knees chasing that little boy, yeah. I was over it. I was like, nope. No need to close my eyes. Can I close my ears at the same time? Drew, it looked horrible.
That scene is great. And the thing that I appreciate that scene, and that's in the preview, so it's no spoiler, but she sort of runs like it reminds me of the Boston Dynamic robots that right. are like, those are these, they're these robots that can walk, move around, crawl, but they're in that uncanny valley area where, like, yes, they're walking, but they don't look like a human walking. And the doll and Megan did the same thing. Like, you can tell that she's trying to get from one part of the woods to another part. And to do that quickly, she can just run on all fours like a dog. And it's incredibly creepy.
Drew, in that space, before we go in detail about the movie, but we have seen robots do all of the things that we saw her do in the movie and other you know, movies with robots in them. So we know that technology is there. That's not just screen animation. That's a real technology that you could develop a robot that can do all the things that we have seen. And, you know, there's been a lot of reference to the Jetsons. I don't know if you remember that cartoon.
Oh, yeah. You
know, how they had a robot that could do all these things. It was capable of thinking and speaking. You know, so we've always had robotic technologies in our media lens in some way or another, right? You know, I know you all are so tired of me talking about this, but War Games. So that giant IBM mainframe, the Whopper. I don't know how Burger King stole their name, the Whopper. You know, we've always had some sort of robotics interface in our lives. So this is not new. Mm-hmm. But what's different about it? Why now?
So I think they're evolving. Our images of them are evolving anyway. Like when I was trying to go back in my mind and think about, you know, robots in film, obviously Megan comes to mind because that's the most recent and the most sort of advanced. But like you're saying, War Games also has an advanced robot. Jumping back to Child's Play a little bit, you know, Child's Play came out in 1980. I've got it in my notes here. 1988, which, you know, not super long ago, but it's pretty old for a movie. And the technology in that was pretty much based around, do you remember the My Little Buddy dolls? They were
I need my blankie right now, Drew. I don't know if I can continue this.
Well, those were like a real thing that like looked sort of like Chucky did, but they had like very basic robotics in them. Like it could, you know, say a few like preset things. It could sing a song. It could maybe like, you know, animate its eyes up and down. It, like very, you know, not super realistic, but it was beginning to creep into that uncanny valley layer. And that Child's Play really is stuck with the culture even until now. Like, you know, I was like, how many Chucky movies are there, Child's Play movies? And I think there's six in the original series, plus a TV show that is still ongoing with the actor that did Chucky's voice. And now his daughter is sort of taking over the mantle and she's beginning to play the doll, which I thought was also pretty cool.
Just for all you Child Play movie fans and the gurus and all the people, I have never seen any of them. And I just want to say that in all of the discussion we're going to have with Drew, I'm probably not ever going to see those or have never seen them. So everything I know about horror movies, I've learned from Drew. And very early on in my life, not to go to them. That was the things that I learned. So, Drew, getting back on track. So, going back to robotics and in the movies. So, Megan. So, what spurred you? So, let me ask this question first. And this might not be a fair question. So you can choose not to answer. But if any horror movie comes out, are you going to go see it, regardless of whether it's good or bad? Ratings? And reviews?
Most likely, yes. I would say the quality of the horror film does not matter. If we are busy seeing another movie that weekend may matter. So we were talking earlier about this horror movie that looks awful. Like it looks like a garbage movie. It's called The Pope's Exorcist. I've never seen a preview so bad, but if there's not another movie playing that weekend, I'll probably go see it.
So with that said, so what led you to see Megan and to feel or come away with the feelings that you had at the Megan review? So I know you saw the previews. Oh yeah, we're going to see that. But then what?
So it was a great preview, first off. Like it was very effective. They show like those creepy moments. Very scary. Yes. It reminded me of Child's Play. I'm a big Child's Play fan, so that made me want to see it. My wife and kid also looked interested in it, so that automatically knocks it up a couple notches if they'll go to see it as well. You know, the movie was very intriguing to me because it was being, you know, it was probably filmed, I guess, like a year and a half or 2 years ago to come out earlier this year. And I feel like it really hits on a lot of things that are coming out like at the moment, like again, like ChatGPT, right? This sort of like AI that's based off of tons of information. Like, you know, they could have fit that right into the movie. Like it's sort of not timeless, but it was very time sensitive with these sort of creatures being a robot that comes from a corporation.
ChatGPT is going to be in the nearest robot near you. So if you haven't wrote the script for it, someone is writing it right now to show that and the benefits of that, which I think will be even more horrible than the movies we've seen thus far, because now this thing has the ability to learn. And it's taking all the data that we have freely given all these tech companies over the years, and it's going to be able to fix our mistakes, learn from them, do better. Oh, I need to go, Drew. I don't even think I can complete this call.
No. Well, it actually could. And like that sort of brings us to sort of the next killer robot, which is the Borgs in Star Trek, which are not even a... that's not a horror movie. I mean, that's very hard sci-fi, but those were some pretty terrifying creatures that were just like on normal TV.
Right.
And you know, their whole thing is I think they were assimilate. I'm not getting that confused with Doctor Who, I hope.
No, you're right. They were always by simulation. Yep, absolutely.
And sort of the thing I really like about that, or not like, but find interesting, is that they're not necessarily killing humans. They're just removing their humanity and replacing it with, you know, cold, hard, robotic parts.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And how long before that happens, Drew? So we know ChatGPT is going to eliminate all the jobs in the world, right? So no humans are going to be needed except for those that can manage the robot who has absorbed all the ChatGPT that there is. So how long? Well, let me ask it this way. Is that possible that something could overpower some portion of humanity to then reprogram it to something else? And I want to ask you this in context with healthcare technology. So you can now choose your baby. You can choose to have a boy. You can choose to have blonde hair and blue eyes. You can choose to not have health traits and all these things. And that's, you're messing with the gene pool in a peachy dish. But now we're talking about humanity and the brain. So we know that, you know, robots have done surgery, right? So very sensitive surgery. So we know that's the case. We know that robots have taken on a lot of the typical hard-end questions in places like NASA and, you know, these high-end national security and all these people who have a very important job that they're using technologies like ChatGPT. But is it possible that what we recognize now is something we're developing will become something that develops us?
That's a great question. I think we're a ways away from it taking over like actual humanity, but I think we are at the precipice of it taking over like small bits. Like when I think about both what I would like to do with ChatGPT and what scares me about it is like if I could train a bot with like my personality characteristics based off of, you know, things that I've done and things that I've said. Part of me likes that, oh, I could have this sort of like virtual assistant to myself that can just sort of do those boring things for me when I'm not thinking about it. Even like thinking about like chatting, right? Like now that everyone works remotely, almost all of our communication is done electronically over some sort of chat application, whether it's, you know, Slack or Microsoft Teams or something like that. And that would be very easy to plug into some sort of like, you know, I say very easy. I don't know that I could do it right now, but I'm sure someone could easily like plug in some sort of GPT-based AI thing to respond just how I would, right? Like if I'm, you know, constantly getting questions about what is blah, like why not train something to just answer that for me? And then I can do something else while it's, you know, giving out these little answers. The things that scares me there is that there's no creativity in an AI, at least now. So like they're only going to be able to rehash old solutions. They're never going to be able to come up with new things. But, you know, it's only a matter of time until it can do both and both rehash old. And, you know, is it going to be able to do critical thinking? Like, I think the answer is probably yes, if it's not there already.
Right. But the problem with critical thinking or any kind of thinking, right? So just imagine you start thinking about this new piece of technology you're going to build in a bot and all the other thoughts that flood into your mind, right? So there is the quality assurance, quantity, all of these things that go into your mind. And while a robot could think all of those things, there's a certain amount of emotion associated with that. So as a human being, when we think about failure, typically we think about failure as a negative thing. A robot might not see failure as that and then act in another way, if you will, right? Mm-hmm. So in other words, when we think of failure, we may think, okay, I'm going to try again. Or we may war games again. We may realize that all the tests we run, we come up with the same results, that this must not be working.
Yeah.
That kind of logical construction in our brain, and maybe, you know, a robot could slice our brain into layers and find out what makes what happen. You know, like, you know, they now know right brain from left brain and all this stuff. But in reality, it is possible that maybe the human piece of us may be far greater than the robotic piece of us. So like I can't remember the movie, but there was something where a human being has a conflict with technology. I can't remember the movie for the life of me. But it was really interesting that the human picked humanity over the technology. And I think that, I can't remember the movie, is when I think of it, I'll tell you. But I think that it's really important that as we think about these advancing technologies specifically, it's fun in the media, right? This is make-believe, right? None of this is true. But there's the dot, dot, dot that comes behind it, right? So, you know, if you think about Star Trek, the pure Star Trek, they had those little walkie-talkies that could talk to you no matter where you were in the world. How long before that's on our desktop? Because we're so close already. Cell phones do a lot of that, right?
Oh, yeah.
So they have these technologies to, what is it, when they make people, transport people from one place to a transporter.
Oh, yeah.
Before that's happening, you know, so, you know, those things that we thought were beyond comprehension are becoming closer and closer. And if they are driven by technology such as AI, or even, you know, pushing AI a little further to machine learning. So AI, artificial intelligence, but then the artificial intelligence now has a brain that's decided wants to learn.
Mm-hmm.
The movies give us a lot to think about. And some of us leave those movies and say, hey, I want to see if I can create that. You know, I want to see if I can make that. So, you know, you could see how that's possible. You know, a movie that's not scary. What's the movie with the alien little person who comes down and the little boy on the bicycle and they're running?
E.T.
E.T., thank you. Yeah. You know, think about that technology. What was that, in the 90s, early 90s?
What was the 80s.
What would it look like today?
Yeah.
What would it look like today with the technology that we have? The question just is, it's like, are we comfortable as a society to move from the movies to reality? And if so, how do we put safeguards around that, Drew?
Yeah. So that, I guess I'll answer with another question. And I'll say, like, are things like science fiction driving technology, or are they inspired by what's coming? Like, specifically talking about Star Trek communicators, you know, they had that. I mean, I think it was before cell phones had even been like thought about. Like, it was not, it was very early.
Right. And I think the answer to your question is both, right? Science fiction is, and both of it is human creativity. We always are looking for convenience. The question is, at what price?
Yeah. Yeah. And even before that, I think about like Dick Tracy had like the watch phones, as well as like Get Smart. Like, they all had like, it's like this thing that's there. It's just not quite in our grasp yet. And then, you know, in just a matter of years or decades, we're able to grab it, which is, it's very exciting, but it's also very scary, which I'll jump to a more scary robot movie. And this is one of my favorites, which is, we're going to go back in time a little more. It's called Chopping Mall.
Oh, my God. Thank God. I never saw that.
I won't say you would love it, Rochelle, but it is amazing. There's no actual chopping in it. It does take place in a mall, but it's about killer security robots that lightning strikes the mall and the robots get zapped. So they have to kill these teenagers that are sleeping over in the mall. I think all of the teenagers are played by actors, and they're at least 30s or 40s. So I also like love and appreciate that bit of movie magic. But, you know, that's, I feel like that's another place that we're not far off from, is like when we think about drones. I mean, the war in Ukraine right now, I mean, I won't say it's all fought by drones, but drones are incredibly like utilized out there, right? Like, they're just sending these, you know, a drone is just, it's like a robot that can fly.
I remember at Duke, the first time we talked about drones, do you remember, they're called something different right now, but they're in the library. They're a technology group. I can't think of what.
Oh, the Colab?
I think that's, I don't remember right off the top of my head, but they are based in the library, and they used to hold these small technology conferences in Rubenstein and in the library. Mm-hmm. And I remember the first time they brought in a drone. Do you remember Mark Everett?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mark Everett was leading the team for this drone thing. It's the first time. And, you know, it was a small little thing. It didn't fly far, but it did what, you know, who knew you could get your groceries delivered with a drone? You could fight a war with a drone. You could transport information. You could spy on people with a drone.
Yeah.
How far it's gone. So it can carry a military payload. A drone can.
Yeah.
So, Drew, I will say, this technology is getting scarier by the day.
It is. It is. And I almost had Chopping Mall in here as a joke, but like, it is, I mean, it's very real. Like, those things are coming in, and like, it's only, I mean, I think they are still like manned drones. I don't know that they will have, I mean, I don't know if they're actually killing combatants in an unmanned way. But that doesn't seem, I mean, that seems like the, I don't see any reason they couldn't right now, right? Like, those drones can kill, they can be run automatically. Like, adding the killing plus automatic piloting sounds like something that's very doable if they're not doing it already, which is also scary, because, you know, that's like a, you know, a thing without a soul deciding if you should live or die, which is a bit nightmare inducing.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that in a lot of ways, when you think about these, I don't even know what the right word is to describe them, but these innovations that come online in the form of a movie, right? So CIT was a group I was trying to think of.
Okay.
But, you know, you see something in a movie, and not long after it, some form of technology has evolved from that, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, humans, and you know, I don't even know how to really classify this, but we have been some of the most innovative people on the planet. And, you know, like, if you think about what innovations have happened in America, early America, I mean, from the tire to the farm appliances to all the things that we've come to today, and innovative as all get out. Question is, will we innovate ourselves out of existence? You know, so every time, like all of these movies you list here, and I will tell you, Drew, this is just pretty frightening. You know, I interview who followed you, I would tell you, y'all need to get y'all a blankie and get it with you when you go to watch any of these movies. But, you know, Blade Runner, you know, yep. Oh my God, you know, like, I want to put this out here, my statement clarification on the record. I have never seen any of these movies, so I have not seen Megan. I've seen the Star Trek stuff. That was just not so scary. But all the rest of these, wait a minute, I did see one of them, the Alien Zoo, and I'll leave it at that. But
I thought maybe you had seen that one.
But most of these movies I have not seen for fear of them terrifying me more than I already am. So now I got to be scared of the snakes and the bugs and the flu and COVID, and I got to be afraid of the robots.
Oh, yeah.
God knows what's coming. And how much control do we have, Drew, to know when we've done too much, when to stop, when to pause?
I mean, we'll probably know after the fact. Like, that's what makes me think, like, one of the reasons that I like Blade Runner so much is that the robots in that are indistinguishable from human beings, right? Like, you can't open them up and see like a circuit board. They're made of organic material. They have emotions. They have, you know, free will. And the conflict comes because they have all of that. They don't want to be treated as robots, which, I mean, I think puts them on the probably the right side of history. And they don't want to be just like retired or destroyed when they're no longer useful. Which I feel like a lot of us think about that as well, right? Like, we don't want to be retired or destroyed after people think that we're not useful anymore. And it's very, I don't know, it's a very sort of profound, sad thing that just comes with this sci-fi movie about Harrison Ford, you know, chasing robots down in this near future. We say near future, but I think it actually took place in like 2017 when it was written, so it's the past now. It's just a past that we never actually made it into.
One of the Star Trek movies is the Star Trek has to come back to Earth and get whales to answer this sound that's happening. And what's really hilarious about that is how they talk about going back to Earth. So they're in 20 something and they're going back into Earth to 2034. And I was sitting there thinking about that. Like, think about, you know, when we first heard about time travel, right? So you got Back to the Future, and a lot of people did it in a fun way. But what if that's possible? What if it's possible that our obsession with robotics leads us to creating a time machine and we can go back? And one of the things that they often say in Star Trek is not to alter the past, right? So you can't go back and make something good happen that's already happened. So, you know, I go back to say, you know, one of your questions was why are we obsessed with bad robots? But the question is, what are we really obsessed with? What's the underlying thing that's driving technology to the movies in the way that it is? Is it that we want to project what our hopes and futures are, or is it because we are anticipating what's next? You have any thoughts about that?
So I think there's a combination. I think in movies specifically, I think robots make a really good monster movie, right? Like, I think of a monster, like traditional monsters like vampires and Frankenstein, and you've got all these sort of things that add a touch of the supernatural to a villain. Like, it would not feel good to watch a movie about a protagonist killing a person that he doesn't like, he or she doesn't like, right? If it's another human being. If the other person is a monster, somebody without humanity or something without humanity, that makes it much more palatable for people to watch. Like, even I think that's where all this zombie craze came from as well, right? Like, both in video games and movies, you don't want to encourage or find joy in killing normal people, we'll say, even if it's through some sort of like fantasy, like a movie or a video game. However, if it's a zombie, well, that doesn't have humanity, that's fine to kill. If it's a monster, no humanity, fine to kill. If it's a robot, no humanity, fine to kill. Like, where is that line? And I don't know, even saying it out loud, it almost sounds like I've got some like bloodlust or something, which I don't think that I do, but I do think that it makes for solid entertainment and takes you on an adventure that you would not have in real life, right? Like, chances are neither of us is going to like fight a humanoid robot in our lifetime. Like, maybe we will.
I'm praying that we won't.
Yeah. I'm not super worried about having to fight a humanoid robot in my lifetime. I am sort of afraid that AI is going to do something to kill me, though, right? Like, which, and I'll jump into another movie that I think this is one you have seen, which is the 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Oh, God.
Where we got Hal, the robot, trying to kill his pilot slash astronaut, like, out in the, you know, middle of cold, dead space, which... You know, that movie came out in 1968, which seems like forever ago. And I feel like they also had a lot of predictions correct.
Right. And I will say that was a long movie. I mean, like, you needed to have a couple of balls of pop and something else. You weren't going to get out of there in 2 hours like most modern movies are today. I mean, it was just really interesting. I you know, I think, though, you know, going back to what you said about, you know, we may not worry about killing a robot or some automated thing. But, you know, on the flip side of that, specifically in Asia, they've made all these doll-like robots for kids, you know, to entertain them, right? They sing, they dance, they do all of these things. So I would think that in those instances, that type of robotics, and maybe not, maybe we get to the point that robots are as bad as we are as humans, right? Robots just wipe out children, whole households, you know, they go down neighborhoods and spray, they become a gang, you know, you got all the red button robots over here and the blue button robots over there, and they're gonna start a gang war or something. I mean, yeah. This is, we're saying this in jest, but in reality, we do not know. And we are racing at record-breaking speed toward these technologies without understanding what the implication is. And, you know, one of the things I wanted, I know we're running short on time, but I want to talk about in the next time we talk about this, or maybe a follow-on, is like, you know, where discrimination and racism falls in these things, right? So you got, mm-hmm. So just think about this. You created a robotic society. So our president of 2082 is a robot.
Mm-hmm.
And he has been filled with all the hate and data we have collected about people that we don't like. And so the robot and his administration, the Department of Defense, whoever's going to kill off all the black and brown and whatever people they don't like. Mm-hmm. Like, again, we're speculating, but it is possible. It is possible that all of these things can, you know, so like we're always worrying about technology getting into the wrong hands. Well, what about the hands that are developing it? Is that the wrong hands?
Yeah.
And the people who are feeding this data to these things, because there's no way applications like ChatGPT cannot learn racism and discrimination and harassment and, you know, hate. You have to put that in whatever mechanism it has that it's learning. The question is, what does it do with those types of constructs, right? So a robot you can define as a piece of electronics put together, da da da, it's got something that makes it work. A human being, there's nothing, you know, so it's a carbon human, a carbon footprint. That's what we are. So
yeah.
What does a robot do with that?
Yeah. there's no telling. And like, I mean, that can be, I mean, I think for good, I mean, I think for good or evil, or accidentally do both, like people can make these robots do whatever. And until recently, I'd always thought like, well, you know, it's humans doing it. Humans generally like want positive outcomes for humanity. But like, oh, I don't know that I still believe that over the last like few years, like thinking about the rise of like online trolling and just this sort of like, there seems to be a lot of people out there who just enjoy causing chaos, right? Like all the 4chan stuff or 8chan or whatever it is now, like those people don't have any, like they're not being, they don't want to be good neighbors. They just want to troll and watch people get upset at stuff. And what, you know, so, you know, maybe Microsoft making a AI or a GPT or, you know, a robot with those features, maybe they're going to have, you know, ethical concerns built in. But what about when 4chan or 8chan wants to do theirs, and they, or Elon Musk, like I could see Elon Musk sort of doing the same thing, like just say no ethics, just let it do what's best for humanity, even if it means killing everybody who's not a billionaire, right? Like that's right. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility.
Right. I agree with you. And I think that, you know, as we think more and more about these things, you know, no one has stepped forward, not the federal government, not these big technology giants, and stepped forward and thought about policies and practices to ensure safe use and applications of all technologies, specifically automation, machine learning, artificial intelligence, you know, Internet of Things. There needs to be a universal policy that says here, like, think about this. Cyberbullying snuck up on us, right? It was, by the time we caught it, so many children had been trolled online, right? And so when you think about technology and where it's going, you know, is it great that we can do these things? But we need policies and practices that describe these things, these, you know, lawsuits between these big companies. You know, to me, that's just a tug of war between giants, and the people who almost always have the outcome or the fallout of this tug of war are the consumers. There must be some way for people to start thinking about this, you know. So if you're going to develop a ChatGPT bot, that you think about how to develop it and what the best policies and practices are. And the best policies and practices, and forgive me for saying this, can't come from white men. It needs to be a diverse audience of people, women, men, young, old, black, white, blue, green, brown, you know, LGBT, whatever it is, it needs to be an inclusive group that are putting together these policies and practices to ensure the safety of us all.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's absolutely. And I feel like that's where a lot of technology has fallen down. And we've talked about that here before, like when so many products are just built by, you know, young, middle-aged white men, like that's not great. That's incredibly exclusionary, even if the people aren't doing it on purpose. They're just, you know, they've got the wrong sample group. They're not fishing from a well with all the other fish. They're fishing at their own well.
Right. And your outcomes almost always are wrong when that is indeed your case. And, you know, I think that, you know, one of the things I would like us to take time to do on this podcast is to talk about the relationship we have developed and how it's changed us, right? So how you see Black people, how I see white people, you know, that how that comes to a place where it's a happy meeting ground. I'm not asking you to change anything about Drew. I love you just the way you are, you know, and so, but I've gotten to know you. You know, I know what your shortcomings are. Scary movies.
There's plenty others. Don't worry.
But, you know, it is possible that technology can be used for good things. You know, we're working remotely. You and I haven't been in person for, what, 3-4 years? You know, since we, and so we are able to still work. So there's good in technology. These robots in these movies with all of this technology is leading us somewhere. We need to get our arms around it before it leads us to a place where it's non-recoverable.
Yeah, no, absolutely. What, like, where do you, how do you think, like, how should we do that? Like, when I think about our relationship, and like, you're absolutely right. Like, I feel we've really gotten to know each other over the last, you know, few years. And I mean, I think I see you differently than I did. I mean, I definitely see you differently than I did when we started. Like, you know, you're no longer Rochelle from work. You're Rochelle. Like, you're like, all of those sort of like labels have just been like removed. And I don't think it was a conscious thing. It was just the more that we talk to each other, the more that like we get to know each other, and you know, all of that other stuff just sort of melts away.
Absolutely. And I think that that's what our society should be tasked with trying to do. You know, it's easy to hate. You know, I mean, I have so many reasons to be angry with my employer and people who I work with who were supposedly friends. But that doesn't serve the universe for me to be angry or to be hate. You know, like all we can do is do the best we can with what we know. And, you know, no one has the book with all the right answers. You have a book with the answers of knowledge you have learned and been able to apply to society. You know, if you grew up in a home, I have a friend like this who grew up in a home whose family did not like Black people. More times than not, you don't like Black people. But given an opportunity to sit down and have a conversation with somebody, it's amazing how you can change. And when we come closer together, we are better. And with technology moving the way it is, like, we believe what we believe about technology, right? We believe what we believe about people who develop it, right? So I'm writing a preface to my book. One of the things I said, you know, like when you think about technology, think of a nondescript building with a bunch of old white men in there, you know, making magic. That might have been how it used to be. That's not the case now. And companies and organizations are better when they are diverse of everything, not just human type, you know, male or female, straight or gay or whatever, but to be diverse in all of that. When it's that way, the outcome is almost always better. And Google, I love you, but you know, you could have thought through this. You are a smart organization. You got thousands of people in your organization coding. And it did not occur to you that if you created a facial recognition software package and you didn't think about Black and brown and yellow and red people, that you came up with a gorilla? That's an example of poor, poor management, project management, team management, you know, work management, because no one thought about what the pieces are. And where was the quality control before you rolled it out, right? So we need policies. We need practices, and we need humans to engage like humans. You know, you can mark off your territory. You go out to the jungle, the lions don't go where the tigers are and the bears. You know, everybody got their own little spot. But they do cross paths, right? They meet at the same watering hole. You know, they all eat grass or whatever they eat.
Yeah.
Humanity has to have similar things. You can be separate. You could be whatever you are. It doesn't mean that you hate somebody that's different from you. The only time I think animals eat each other is when they're hungry. They don't kill just for the sake of killing. They don't destroy things for the sake of destroying. They do for need. And that's what human beings need to be more like. Do what you need to do to survive and persevere within your community, but don't destroy another community just because it's there.
Yes, absolutely. And I think the world needs more Rochelles, by the way. Like, I love that, like your outlook on that is like spot on, along with your endless positivity on it. Like it's great. So thank you, Rochelle, for being Rochelle.
Absolutely. And I will say, Drew, you need to bring us to the water, you know, when you take us to drink of water slowly. We cannot just imbibe Megan, you know. We need time to get Megan into our heads. I mean, Drew, I just, you were not scared at all.
No, I would have liked it to be a little bit more scary, to be honest.
What? And so we won't destroy the part for the audience that's listening, but I can only hope that her demise was as brutal as the demise that she caused others.
Well, I will give a little, I don't think this is a huge spoiler, but they are making some sequels. So there will be more. I expect we will get at least two more Megan movies before the world gets tired of paying to see the Megan Killer Robot in the theater, because it made a ton of money.
I don't think we're ever going to get tired of it. There are people just like you, Drew. Is there a community out on Facebook of people who love horror movies? And are you aware of that?
Oh, yeah.
So you already know that there's not. So they're going to go fix the error in the chip that allowed her to be destroyed. So now it's going to be hard to kill her, right? So,
well, she get uploaded to the cloud. The cloud is immortal, right?
Oh, my God. So, Drew, print that. Put that in print somewhere. Copyright that. The cloud is immortal. Do you know how? Do something with that, Drew.
Yeah, I've never really thought about it besides horror movie uploads.
But that's pretty powerful. So, you know, if you link that with BitLocker, I'm sorry.
Blockchain and Bitcoin.
Blockchain. If you link that with blockchain, it's absolutely 100% true statement that the cloud is immortal for all things, more than just life and death. But yes and no.
Yeah, yeah, it absolutely is.
Absolutely. Wait to see that cloud. The cloud is immortal. Oh my God.
It never goes away.
Oh my God, that's pretty powerful, Drew.
Well, I think we are about at time. So thank you for everybody for listening. Last week, we talked about AI and some more ChatGPT talk. So if you didn't get to listen to that, go back and give it a listen. I think as with everything technology, it sort of loops back into our conversation today about killer robots. And we look forward to hearing from you. And we will talk to you all next week.